to the Northview High School Youth podcast called Between Two Worlds. My name's Luke. I'm your host, and here is Ron.
Hey,
and
glad to be here.
Gitch.
I thought I was the host.
You could be a host sometime.
You don't.
Not
have,
today.
You
don't.
But have to sign up for it.
Oh,
and you don't have a computer in front of you.
Oh, but so. I have headphones on.
You don't even look like a host.
I could be though.
Give me.
I was always told my mom. See, my mom said I had a face for radio. I thought that was nice.
That's so true.
See?
Seriously?
Really do. She said, I had a face for radio.
What does that mean?
I think it means I'm ugly, but I would look good behind a mic.
Your mother would actually say that?
No, she never did.
She never
My
said
wife
that.
Says that.
Your wife
that
would
you're
never
ugly?
Say that.
No, that I have a face for radio. See, you can say something without actually saying something.
Well, you just said something there.
Luke has a good face for radio.
Oh, thanks, Gitch. I appreciate that.
Wow.
Nicest thing you ever said.
Sometimes, maybe we should go live. Maybe we should telecast this, too.
Hey, that would be fun. But
like a podcast?
Yeah, do the like just do the thing live with camera.
Isn't that a TV show?
Well,
no.
No, not really.
Facebook Live.
It's like what all sports people do.
Yeah, they'd be the like
Dave Naylor, isn't that it?
Yeah. Dave Naylor, yeah. Oh yeah, it's Leafs Lunch. I always watch Leafs Lunch.
You could be you could be like Don Cherry.
I could.
You need a cool suit though.
Yeah.
I mean, I like that shirt, but
yeah.
You need like
this tablecloth right here looks like a Don Cherry jacket. Right. Where did they get
this
from?
It's true.
Maybe it is Don Cherry's jacket.
It could be.
Yeah. So, do you guys, I was watching TV last night and I watched my first or second ever time watching The Walking Dead. And so the premiere for the new season just came on and it was awful.
Mm. Awful.
So gory.
You watch it, Ron?
No.
Gitch, do you?
I did not.
I do not. I recently, my wife and myself got rid of our cable subscription.
Ooh, gone.
So.
Do you get any channels?
How do you watch the Leafs play?
I don't see, but I catch my sports because I can watch it online through the whole Shaw free range thing from my parents. I steal their login.
From your parents on the island?
Yeah, the iPad. I log in and I can watch. So anyways, we got rid of it because TV tends to absorb a lot of our time, but
it's
shows like The Walking
too.
It's expensive, but shows like The Walking Dead particularly don't interest me.
No,
so I have to be honest, I can't comment too much.
Won't
here
go there.
Won't even go there.
Well, we should go there.
We should go there.
Did you like it?
No, I didn't. I thought it was so there's a guy who had a baseball bat wrapped in barbed wire and he just bashed a guy's head in twice.
Was he a human though?
Yeah, they're both all humans. Or apparently The Walking Dead zombies aren't even a thing. It's just all about how people are fighting people. I don't get it.
Is this show getting any traction?
Oh, it's one of the biggest shows out there. I'd say.
Like
I'd say it's the biggest.
Really?
Right now?
Oh, yeah.
I'd say Walking Dead.
So who's huge watching numbers. It?
People my
is
age,
is this
for
high
sure.
school or more college? Young adult?
I would say both. I mean, both? I know a lot of teens who are into it. I know a lot of young adults, folks my age. I have older siblings who would be, I guess they would be Gen Y. That generation?
Yeah.
Gen Y.
Well, it's like...
Gen Y.
I mean, think about it. Andy Steiger had a whole series on zombie culture.
Yes.
I think Andy Steiger's writing his second book right now called Zombie Culture.
True.
After Thinking?
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 Series. The Thinking series.
It's a hot issue, for sure.
It but is. Maybe one day. One day, maybe we'll get into some of these popular TV shows that have a definite influence
transition
on our culture.
From that, I think... What I saw from the show was mental illness.
Hmm.
People killing people. And people often use that as a huge excuse. As you see when there's a rampage going on in America, people are like, oh, it's not gun control issues. It's mental health issues. That person who shot all those people, they had something mentally wrong with them in order for them to do that. And that's what I thought of. And I think this is a great topic because it goes along with, I think a couple weeks ago, there was mental health awareness. And all over Facebook, I just saw my friends' pictures being like, I struggled with this, I struggled with this, I struggled with this. And then I looked online and apparently it's 1 in 5 adult Canadians will have struggled with some sort of mental illness in their life.
Hmm.
1 in 5.
Wow.
Is going to struggle.
So how would you define that mental illness then? Because that's a
very
pretty,
broad. Yeah. So I think that's anything from ADHD, ADD to depression, anxiety, social anxiety with being in new situations, being in large groups of people, being in small groups of people, anything like that is considered a mental illness, even all the way up to schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, anything like that.
And some are short term, some are longer term.
And some of them, I was reading the article and it said some people can actually live a normal life, and which is saying that maybe you can't actually live a normal life, but you can live a normal life and actually some people grow out of it. So, Ron, you're pretty sure you had ADD as a kid.
Well, excuse me. I think in the world of diagnosis, there was no such thing as ADHD when I was a teenager or as a child, but I was extremely distracted in school. Focus was a hard thing for me. And, of course, you're kind of blamed as the rowdy, disruptive kid that is preventing others from learning, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, so all of those things, you know, you kind of fight your way through adolescence and into becoming a young adult, and you figure out how you respond. And then, you know, fortunately, I think, you know, things do change. I mean, it wasn't a high-end, you know, ADHD, but, I mean, there is definitely characteristics that I carry about that. And, you know, I mean, obviously you learn to live with it, but I think the diagnosis now has become much more clear earlier. Our doctors, our medical field, they look for these. And obviously working with teenagers, we see it every week we run youth group, you know. So
it's interesting. My wife, her training is in special education. And so she's, you know, not, no expert by any means, no doctor, but she can't diagnose or anything like that. But she's got a, you know, respectable amount of experience working with, you know, a lot of students, middle school, high school age students with different diagnoses. And one thing that's interesting is that a lot of these, they're all spectrums and such that, Ron, you commented about diagnosing, such that it's a spectrum, but also the range, you know, the range is increased, but also the different types. So, you know, at one point there was sort of just ADD, but now we've realized, hey, there's something called ODD and, you know, oppositional defiance and ADHD. And so there's different types of different developmental challenges. And so it's really opened up a whole new world. I think of, you know, everything from mental illness to developmental delays and things like that. But there's a lot more than just, you know, hey, he's a disruptive, rowdy kid who won't focus.
Yep, but, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think what happens too is that, you know, parents didn't know how to deal with this. School system didn't know how to deal with this. You know, so these, a lot of these kids that grew up in my era, you know, you know, born, you know, the baby boomer generation. I mean, you had to fight through it, wrestle through it, figure out where you're going to fit in this society and learn to embrace your own issues that you didn't even know you had.
Yeah.
You know, and then they surface in careers, they surface in marriages, they surface in how you parent. And all of a sudden you're realizing, you know, there's some things that have really stacked up against this from time on. And so I think now as youth workers, I mean, we see things. And I know that, you know, we started this off with, you know, mental illness. But I look at how, and I don't know if we want to segue into this thing, but this whole idea of depression and anxiety. You know, these are the things that we see so often and hear so often. And I think, you know, social media allows us to really look into a lot of lives of students because, you know, people kind of put stuff out there that says, you know, I wonder what's going on here.
Yeah.
And all of those things. But yeah, that's where I feel like, you know, we're in this world of youth ministry and we recognize that depression and anxiety are very real upfront things that we need to speak to.
Yeah. Because even me growing up, like, depression, anxiety, those weren't real, like, issues with people in high school. And those would be, like, you're just going through a phase. You're just going through something, like, a little bit, just, like, this will last a couple weeks. Like, that's, don't worry about it. And now it's coming out that this is crippling people in high school. They can't even go to school. They can't do anything. They get too nervous. They're too scared, too anxious. And it's wrecking their lives. And so how do we, as youth pastors, youth directors, how do we get this conversation open? How do we get this out there for people to realize that this isn't something that just you struggle with, that this is something so many people have problems with? And where do you go? What do you do?
Well, I think, I mean, obviously the three of us work with high school students, middle school students. We want to just declare this publicly, openly. We are not professionals. We are not doctors. You know, we're not here for diagnosis. What we're seeing, though, is we're seeing a larger, you know, and is it normal or is it above normal? I mean, everybody gets depressed, right? Yeah. I mean, we all have down days. We all have things that happen to us that make us sad.
Mm-hmm. But even such that you know, Facebook has the thing you can choose how you're feeling. You're feeling excited. You can put I'm feeling depressed, and that'll change. You know, by noon o'clock, you might be feeling great again.
Yep. No. Sometimes. Yeah. I know. And I think that's what we have to, but that's what we pick up on. You know, like, we recognize that when students come to our group and we recognize that, hey, I'm in conversation with this person is struggling with sadness, mm-hmm. depression, high anxiety, you know, and often we get to what's causing that, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of what has happened, or is this an ongoing thing? But I mean, it's so disruptive for these students. I mean, they can't sleep. Mm-hmm. They mm-hmm. can't come out into public. They pull away, mm-hmm. you know, from the people that, you know, mean the most to them. You mm-hmm. know, so there's a lot of things that happen as a result of mm-hmm. this. And I think this catches parents off guard, because what? My kids are, you know, are suffering from depression or high anxiety. Where'd this come from? You know, is it a genetic thing, you know, or what happens? You know, so there's a lot to be discussed and discovered here. So, mm-hmm. you know, and I think there are things that we as a church and we as a youth group need to continue to address, because this doesn't just stop. And I think, Luke, you had mentioned this prior to coming on here, that, you know, this carries right on into these young adult years. You know, mm-hmm. I'm no longer a teenager, therefore all this is gone. It's not just a phase. Yeah. You know, there are certain things, obviously, that, you know, can, you know, lessen the blow, but a lot of times this does, you know, affect itself all the way through.
I think one of the things to point out too, Luke, you mentioned about it crippling people and stuff. I think it's called mental illness for a reason. And, you know, you could get physically ill too. You know, you could get the flu, or you could break your leg, you know, something mm-hmm. that requires treatment. You might be hospitalized because you were in a car accident, or maybe you have whiplash. You can have a physical illness or injury, but, you know, same with this, it's a mental illness. That word illness is, mm-hmm. it's real, it's true. And I think there is a bit of a disconnect, or there has been. Even I know when I was in my high school years, a lot of my friends went through different phases, and their parents didn't know how to deal with it. And the outworkings of it are very diverse, and you know, there's a huge range. But a lot of my friends' parents would say, you know, welcome to being a teenager, and it'll pass. And, mm-hmm. you know, your girlfriend who dumped you or whatever, you know, you'll get over it.
Well, I mean, biologically speaking, I mean, when a teenager is their body is changing on various levels, from the emotional to the mental to the social, the physiological level changes as well, you know, and so with mental development comes moodiness. Teenagers are moody, you know, because they can't figure out why I'm feeling happy, why I'm feeling sad, why does this destroy me, why does this give me unbelievable happiness, you know, and so they can live in those two worlds. And then you couple that with something that happens. Maybe it's a breakup of a boyfriend and girlfriend, or, you know, there's a parental things that are going on, you know, family difficulties, and all of a sudden there's a side of sadness that they haven't got the capacity to deal with. And that could spin them into a life of more depression and angst and anxiety, because not having the coping mechanisms on how to deal with that. Adults typically can handle that a little bit better.
Yeah. So what do you do when someone does approach you and say, I'm dealing with this sadness, this depressiveness. What do I do about this? Will it just go away? What do I do? So if a kid comes to you
Well, I think first and foremost, you want to recognize this as brokenness. Mm-hmm. You know, they're coming to you because they feel broken, right? There is a sense of there's something wrong with me, or there's something wrong in my life that I can't figure out. So obviously, you know, we have to become incredibly good listeners and that are empathetic. We can't have that attitude that says, grow up. Welcome to the real world. Mm-hmm. I get sad too, or, you know, all of those things. I got a bad day. You know, don't talk to me about your bad. No, we have to be very empathetic. Mm-hmm. We have to recognize that brokenness is a part of the world that we live in. I mean, going back to Genesis, you mm-hmm. know, from Adam and Eve into the garden. I mean, there's a lot of things that happened when sin entered the world. And part of that is that there's a sense of sadness and brokenness that comes into people's lives when things happen to them. And often we are reactory to that. And so our job, I think, as youth pastors and youth workers is to listen and to, mm-hmm. You know, to dig as deep as we possibly can as to hear that story. What is precipitating this sadness? Like, what comes before the sadness, you know? And we have to be good you know, good at asking questions. And but I mean, obviously, to encourage the fact that they speak is good.
Yeah, and I think often you're absolutely right. I think, you know, even just in my experience so far, there's always issues behind the issues. There's compounding factors that could be sort of, in some cases, it could be like the straw that breaks the camel's back. You know what I mean? Where it seems like, you know, a teenager's world is just completely crumbled. But meanwhile, there's this going on at home, and there's this going on at school, and there's this going on in their sports teams, and there's compounding factors. And so I think you're right, Ron. I think our job isn't necessarily to be fixers, but our job, I think, as youth workers is to be diggers and good question askers and point them to truth. I think, you know, it isn't cliche to pray with them, and it isn't cliche to point them to scripture and remind them of who their identity is, because so often a teenager's world is shattered because their identity is lost because their girlfriend or boyfriend dumped them, or they lost their job, or they failed a test. And so often your identity is tied up there, right? And so your whole world has just crumbled because you've pulled out a brick from your, you know, wall of identity. But the reality is your identity isn't in these things. Your identity is secured and set in scripture. So it is, it is cliche to say, oh, just pray with them. And it seems a little bit pat, but I don't think it has to be.
No, agreed.
Yeah. So with this, you mentioned to pray with them. Is that all we can do, is just say, hey, God, we give this to you? Or has God given us other things to do with this? So what I think what I'm getting at is people often come into this like, my kid struggles with this. Do I give them medication? Mm-hmm. Do I let them have these drugs? Is this okay? Is this not good?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously with... psychiatry enters into the picture here. When I have counseled teenagers and individuals that are struggling with depression, it is important to have a medical examination here too. Is there something going on biologically? Mm-hmm. You know, just because my head is telling me I'm depressed or you know, I'm suffering from anxiety, I mean, get that medical opinion too. Doctors are far more interested now in hearing the story too. Mm. Okay, why are you in? Why do you need to see me? You know, and you got to have a good family doctor. You got to have somebody there, because you and I, all three of us here, we're not trained counselors. We're not. We don't know how to, you know, figure out exactly what's going on here. Yeah. We are listeners, and we are the people that we want to be pastoral. We want to be that build that trust relationship. Mm-hmm. The fact that these students have come to us, I mean, that's solid. And we want to be right alongside them. But if there are things that are out of our league, mm-hmm. We need to direct them to the professionals. Mm-hmm. And that is, by all means, so, so crucial. The other side of that is that, you know, many of our teenagers, Marv Penner talks about this in his book, Help, My Kids Are Hurting. He talks that the high number of students who are depressed suffer from reactive depression, meaning that there's something that has happened in their life.
Yeah.
So our job then as youth workers is figure out, okay, what's happened? So we want to dig below the surface, want to dig below the sadness, the actions that they're exhibiting, what's causing them? So if it's a medical, biological thing, that's we cannot mm-hmm. help that. That's where doctors get in the mix. And that's why it's so important to mm-hmm. to see the medical doctor. And if there's a need for a psychiatrist, all of those things. Because you got to remember, depression, students who struggle with depression are 12 times more likely to proceed to have suicidal thoughts. Mm-hmm. So it's so good that we hear this, because we don't want this to progress anymore, right? So, you know, we've got to have professionals. We've got to have, you know, that referral aspect in our world, mm-hmm. in our world, that says, okay, we need to see somebody here. And then also just to kind of dig down a little bit deeper. What's going on in your world? What's your story? All of those things. And then if we can find what's going on, that's where we can help out.
So the opposite, you mentioned a lot of our teenagers deal with reactive stress or a reactive depression or reactive, you know, it's a sudden response to something unexpected, mm-hmm. you know, so they're depressed because a certain something happened in their world. And I think the opposite of reactive, the thing you do to prevent that is, you know, counteractive, preventative measures. And I think there are things you can, you know, implement so that you're set up so that when your world seems like it's going to fall apart, that it actually doesn't. And I think while you're in this reactive stage, I think, you know, Ron said it well with, you know, we aren't the heroes. We don't need to be. It's not my job. It's out of my pay grade. It's out of my realm to begin diagnosing and giving medical advice on things, because that's a very serious thing. And so referrals, I think, is really key. And you know, it's our job to use our discretion and wisdom for, you know, knowing when something needs to be passed on. You know, serving here at Northview, I'm always amazed at our care department and how many times I've been able to send people to the care department and say, hey, look, this is a real difficult issue you're facing. Let's see if we can help you out. And so we have resources for those of you who may not have heard of our care department. The care department does some great stuff. And one of the things we do is we do a collection once a month, and all that money that comes in goes out. And basically it goes to everything from paying rent or paying, you know, maybe buying food for a family in need, but it also pays for things like counseling or getting some different therapy for when things are needed. Mm-hmm. For families who just simply can't afford it. The care department also does, you know, Vic and Thalia are trained to some level with counseling and with digging through these issues. And, you know, Thalia is famous for calling all these things muck. So if you have muck that needs to be dealt with, you know, Thalia and Vic are great pastors on staff here that can help you sort through things. But also, you know, they have the wherewithal to know when something's beyond them too. And they can send you elsewhere. But no one's job is to be the hero. I think it's sort of a team. It's a combination of pastors. Mm-hmm. It's a combination of parents and teachers to all have a clear sense of what their role is and to be able to work together and handle this properly.
Yeah. No, I agree. And the other side of that too is from a parental point of view and also from a youth pastor point of view is, statistically speaking, girls are twice as likely to be in a state of depression and anxiety than guys at the age of 15.
Wow.
And, you know, I think there's a lot of reasons for that, and typically in our society, on how, you know, it's all about how you look. Mm. It's all about, you know, the popularity stuff, you know, all of those things that, you know, the self-esteem issues are absolutely frightening, you know, in our world today. Because we just can't measure up to what Hollywood says. Mm-hmm. You know, we just can't. And of course, if that's the message we're sending in, especially young girls, and then you think about all the various, you know, things that can happen as a result of depression, eating disorders, and it just goes on and on and on. It's because of this image that we're required to have. And then, you know, you couple that with things that aren't going well at home, friendships, boyfriend, girlfriend issues, you know, family stuff. I mean, there are so many things that can mount up, and then it draws them into this cycle of depression, you know. And those are things that just happen to them. And so our job is obviously to speak hope. You know, when you ask the question, Luke, about what do? We should be speaking hope into the lives of students.
Yeah.
I mean, if we don't have a message of hope for brokenness, then we are missing this, you know?
Mm-hmm. Would it be worth, I'm going to go ahead and say it is worth talking about it. What do you guys think to do? What are some preventative measures? What are some things we can do early on for, you know, for youth workers and anyone listening who maybe is a parent, or what are some warning signs or some bells, or what are some things they can implement to be able to catch this kind of type of thing? You know, oftentimes it is a sudden, almost like a tsunami of circumstances that build up. But in order to be preventative and not reactive to these things, in order to be proactive, what are some things that we can look out for, or we can put into place?
Yeah, I can think of a couple, and one is keeping this conversation open. That there are many people who struggle with this, and there's many artists, there's many popular people out there in the world that struggle with this, and realizing that you're not by yourself, that this is something, and this is keeping an open dialogue with your kids. And what I think very important is having daily conversations with your kids. Seeing how they're doing every day, if that's in a car ride home, if that's at a dinner table, dinner table discussions are so important. So anything like that, just keeping this open communication and just keeping up this, hey, if you need to talk, let me know. Sometimes kids don't know that they can talk to their parents about this stuff.
Absolutely. And I think that's key. I mean, we see them once or twice a week, a couple hours, that could be, you know, 20 kids or 200 kids, and how are you going to know? Because any kid can put on that false, you know, impression of what's going on.
In 2 hours, they can do whatever they want.
You know, exactly. So I think for parents, here's something, and Luke, I don't know if you remember this, but, you know, I mean, family time and getting around the table is a very, very important time for us, especially, you know, in those, you know, in the years before life got so busy with sports and all that kind of stuff when things were happening all over the place. But what I often would do, and I don't know if you remember this, is I would ask the question around the table. This is a great thing for parents to do. This is, what made you laugh today? You know, so we got six people around the table. And so we'd ask all the kids, what made you laugh today? So you would actually have to go back in your day and say, oh, I can't believe what Tanner did today. This just killed me. Like, blah, 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 blah. You know, and whatever it is. Then I'd say, okay, well, what made you sad today? Oh, okay. So what you're doing then as a parent, you're getting involved into the emotional world of these, your kids. Yeah. Don't just expect them to unpack their entire day, especially as adolescents continues to grow. They're needing you less. Okay, they are. And so they're thinking, I have to figure this out myself. And that's where you as a parent need to jump in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've even seen too, just with my high schoolers, both in the Mission campus too, and the students I'm close with from the Abbotsford campus, I see this, you know, widespread, and even in public schools and in non-Christian settings too, is the students who have a ongoing conversational type relationship with their parents, where they know that they can talk about things, and, you know, where this dialogue is always going back and forth, everything from, hey, how's your day? What's difficult? What made you laugh? What made you cry? What's good? What's bad? But having this healthy relationship ongoing, it pays its dividends 100%, so that you're not actually trying to catch up to things in your teenage years to try and, you know, get to know your kid all of a sudden. I've got a few different parents who make a routine, make a habit every year, maybe twice a year, whatever it is. They either go for a trip or something like that, but they have this closeness, you know, where they're almost friends. You know, your job as a parent isn't to be your kid's buddy, but that can also happen too, right? You can be friends with your son or daughter. You can be close with them and have that kind of friendship type conversation. And that's where the transparency really comes in my experience.
Yeah. So we understand this is a heavy topic, and you can go down so many rabbit trails with this. So if anyone listening has any questions, please email one of us.
Email Luke. Not me.
Okay, email me at lfriesen@northview.org. So this has been the Between Two Worlds podcast. And thanks for listening. And go Leafs, go.
Oh, go Flames. Forget the Leafs.
Yeah, we know where the Flames went. They sizzled. They are flamed out.
Oh, doused.
Wow. It's coming. They're coming.
That's big.
Yeah. Brian Elliott. Go Brian Elliott.
Bottom of that totem pole, man.
Vancouver's better than them.
Hey, Vancouver's got a good record this year.
4-1-0, was it? Something like that?
Something like that.
I don't know. I don't care.
Leafs won one game.